Hi there, everyone. Welcome back to Hits 21, where me, Rob,
me, Andy,
and me, Lizzie,
all look back at every single UK number one of the 21st century, from January 2000 right through to the present day. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Twitter. We are at Hits21UK, that is at Hits21UK, and you can email us too. Just send it on over to Hits21podcast@gmail.com. Thank you so much for joining us again, and thank you so much this week for everybody who has been listening to us this year and sharing that fact with us. Thanks to Spotify Wrapped this week. A lot of people getting in touch with us saying that they listened to us a lot, which was very humbling.
Yes, it was.
And yeah, thank you very much for sticking with us. We are currently looking back at the year 2006. This week we'll be covering the period between the 26th of February and the 25th of March, so a little bit of a shorter period than the last episode covered. Before we get going this week, I like to think we had something to do with this. Miami 7 is on iPlayer.
Yes.
Officially. It's the first, I think, Lizzie, you were saying before, that it's, or Andy, that it is the first official release of Miami 7 since the VHS.
Yeah.
It has never been on DVD or anything like that.
And bear in mind that VHS came out right after broadcast. The VHS came out in 2000. So this is the first release of any kind it's had in 23 years. And I do like to think we had something to do with that. I knew there was some reason why we had that call with the Director General of the BBC last week. I mean, we came up on his Spotify Wrapped, and I thought that was why. So, yeah.
You can check out our episode on Miami 7 if you like. You just have to scroll a little bit further back in your feed to the end of 2003. Last week's poll winner for our first episode of 2006 was Arctic Monkeys' When the Sun Goes Down. It won by quite a length, actually, from the other two that were up for consideration. So well done to them. And it's on to this week's episode. And as always, it's time for some news headlines from the sort of February-March period of 2006. In Vietnam, Paul Gadd, better known as Gary Glitter, is sentenced to 3 years in prison after being convicted of sexually abusing two minors. After serving his sentence, he was deported back to the UK, where he was made to sign the Sex Offenders Register.
British peace activist Norman Kemba is released by his captors after being held hostage in Iraq for several months. Kemba, along with three Canadian activists, were rescued by the SAS, and Kemba later said he was surprised by how moderately he was treated by his captors.
And six men taking part in a clinical trial for a new anti-inflammatory drug are placed in intensive care after suffering adverse side effects. The drug, known as TGN-1412, remains in clinical trials to this day, despite having resulted in the deaths of five people.
The films to hit the top of the UK box office during this period were as follows. Date Movie for 2 weeks, The Hills Have Eyes for 1 week, The Pink Panther for 1 week. And in tragic news, Dick and Dom in the Bungalow comes to an end and broadcasts its last ever episode on CBBC.
We're growing up. On BBC One, Tony Blair becomes the first serving Prime Minister to be interviewed by Michael Parkinson on his chat show. During the interview, Blair admits that his tenure as Prime Minister is likely to be remembered for the still ongoing Iraq War.
Do you reckon, Tony?
Yeah, I think he might have somewhat had his finger on the pulse there. Yeah.
And in America, another end of an era, the final episode of Soul Train is broadcast. The long-running musical performance series aired its first episode in 1971. Its final episode featured performances from Guapelli and Lorenzo Owens, having showcased performances from T.I. and D4L in its last weeks on the air.
Andy, the UK album charts, how are they looking?
It's looking pretty indicative of 2006, to be honest, is what I would say, other than one outlier. I think if I could tell you the artists that have number one on the albums chart this week, you would definitely guess that it's somewhere around 2006. And I would have said the same for last week, to be honest, given that we had The Strokes, Hardfire and Arctic Monkeys. But it's even more noughties nostalgia here with Jack Johnson with In Between Dreams at number one for 1 week, that went 5 times platinum, and I'm not surprised because that album was kind of everywhere. It really got quite insipid, that Jack Johnson stuff, didn't it, with the no combination of words I could fit on the back of a postcard. But that was number one for just 1 week before it was toppled by Corinne Bailey Rae with her debut album, Corinne Bailey Rae, aptly titled there. That went number one for just 1 week again and went 3 times platinum. Before it was toppled by a bit of a random inclusion here, which is On an Island by David Gilmour, which went single platinum and was again only number one for 1 week. It was David Gilmour's first solo album for 22 years, so a relatively big deal there, which is probably why it got to number one. And then it was toppled by Corinne Bailey Rae, with Corinne Bailey Rae, for one more week. So yes, other than David Gilmour, it's a decidedly solid 2006 week on the charts this week, with Jack Johnson and Corinne Bailey Rae. Yeah.
Two things. Better Together by Jack Johnson is still the hold music for TransUnion, formerly Call Credit. I work for a company who work in association with Call Credit / TransUnion, and their hold music is still Better Together after all this time. And On an Island, David Gilmour, that album was a massive deal for my parents. Absolutely massive. I remember all through the summer of 2006, they would sit out on our back step with their friends with that playing from the record, from the stereo player in the kitchen, or they'd have it leaning out the window while they sat in the back garden. Yeah, huge deal for them. Really huge. Lizzie, the US, how are things?
Well, Beyonce held the number one single for the whole of February with Check On It, which I mentioned last week. But moving into March, we have a debut number one for James Blunt, who got to number one with You're Beautiful.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Yeah, despite only 1 week at number one, it went 4 times platinum in the US. And we covered it on this podcast during our 2005 run, if you wanted to go and check that out, if you've not already heard it. After that, Neo scored his first number one with So Sick, which got to number one for 2 weeks in the US and was eventually certified gold. It also got to number one over here, and it'll be the first song on our next episode. So over two albums, I will quickly go through each with their time spent at number one, as well as their UK chart placing. So first up is Ghetto Classics by Jaheim, which spent 1 week at number one, but failed to make the chart in the UK. Next up is a big one. I'm sure you'll know this one. High School Musical by the High School Musical cast.
Oh, yeah.
It spent 2 non-consecutive weeks at number one, but was ineligible for the main UK albums chart, but got to number one on our compilations chart. And then we have In My Own Words by Neo, which spent 1 week at number one, and also got to number 14 in the UK. And finally this week, we have Reality Check by Juvenile, which also spent 1 week at number one, but failed to make the chart in the UK.
Yeah, that High School Musical one. Ugh. That is like peak end of year 7, beginning of year 8 shit for me.
Peak school disco is sort of...
Massively high school disco, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so thank you both for those reports, and we'll move swiftly on to our first song up this week, which is this.
Je suis désolé. Sono spiacente. We'll be right back.
is Sorry by Madonna. Released as the second single from her 10th studio album, titled Confessions on a Dance Floor, Sorry is Madonna's 60th single overall to be released in the UK and her 12th single to reach number one. And it's not the last time that we'll be discussing Madonna on this podcast, at least as a solo artist. Sorry went straight in at number one as a brand new entry, knocking Mek and Leo Sayer off the top of the charts. It stayed at number one for 1 week. In its first and only week atop the charts, it sold 37,000 copies, beating competition from Put Your Records On by Corinne Bailey Rae, which got to number two, Amazing by Westlife, which got to number four, and Is It Just Me by The Darkness, which got to number eight. When it was knocked off the top of the charts, Sorry fell three places to number four. By the time it was done on the charts, it had been inside the top 100 for 19 weeks. The song is currently officially certified silver in the UK as of 2023, which came as a little bit of a surprise to me. I expected more. Andy, Sorry, Madonna.
Yeah, in many ways, Sorry, Madonna is the exact phrase that I would have said to her after Hung Up, because at the start of this podcast, I was a little bit harsh on her, I think. That, I mean, it's funny because she entered into the noughties in an era that was not particularly to my taste. And then I loved Hung Up so much more that I was like, yeah, this is a good era for Madonna, I'm into this. And so I find it very difficult to not view this through that frame, to be honest, of, you know, as the follow-up to Hung Up. And it means I'm being a little bit meaner about it than I should do, really, because I've got to admit, I was slightly underwhelmed by this. Only slightly. And I want to be clear that I am still positive about this. But I just think Hung Up was a real kind of injection of life. That there was something so exciting about it, that it was a simple idea that was very well executed with kind of maximum vigour. And this is not quite that, to be honest. I think it rides on the coattails of things that were good about Hung Up and things that are good about this era for Madonna. And I've said before about Madonna that she really is very, very defined by clearly marked eras with her albums, like far more than most artists are, really, that you can listen to basically any Madonna song from most of her albums and be able to clearly identify which album it's from. And this is no different, that this sounds like a Confessions on a Dance Floor song. And that's not a criticism. You know, it's definitely got that dancey feel to it. It's definitely got that kind of sense of, it's pretty catchy, but not in a way that's insipid or annoying. And I think Madonna definitely seems full of life in this, in a way that she sort of hasn't done in some previous eras. But it just doesn't really have the same sense of ingenuity to it that Hung Up did for me. I think it's just a little bit bordering on generic, slightly. I really, really like that chorus. I just wish it kind of went further from there, that it relies very heavily on that chorus, that for each kind of minute to minute and a half period that the chorus isn't there, I just need it to come back. I just want it back, really. And it sort of failed to kind of capture my attention as much as I would have liked. But again, I'm being harsh on it, I think, because I really liked Hung Up and I thought we were on a real upward swing there. But this is still good. This is still good. I'm not sure that I would really ever sort of include it in my best of Madonna playlist or anything like that, which I do have, obviously. But I think it's fine. Just sort of fine, to be honest. I think if I was looking for a follow-up to Hung Up, I would have expected more than this, to be honest. But again, I really, really can't separate the song from the artist here. But yeah, this is decent. Like I say, there's a lot that is good about it. I really, really like that sort of disco percussive feel that there is to this. Really like the music video, actually. Very, very interesting video. That's definitely worth a watch. But it's not Hung Up, and I wish it was Hung Up. Let's just listen to that again. Yeah.
Yeah, feel kind of similar, actually, because just like Hung Up, I am a big fan of this as well. You know, I think this era of Madonna kind of redefining herself as a 21st century kind of dance floor specialist and a bit of a, you know, a bit of a dance floor diva sort of thing, really, you know, it paid off. I think, you know, there's a sinister edge to this and Hung Up There's like a shade of darkness, you know, of someone kind of dancing their troubles away, but not like in the free-spirited, optimistic sense of things like Holiday or Lucky Star or True Blue, but in a more moody manner of things, like Hung Up and even things like, well, basically most of the stuff off Bedtime Stories and Erotica and Ray of Light and stuff like that. You can see the image of dancing out her demons, but you get the very real sense that, like, the demons will still be there when she's done. Like, I listened to Sorry, and it's Madonna on the dance floor in that kind of pink leotard bodysuit thing, dancing furiously, but, like, the furiousness isn't waning. Like, it's still sticking in her mind. She's not looking at anyone, you know, eyes down. And with this, you get the real strong sense that she's so kind of just tired of the relationship that she's in, beyond the point of even, like, wanting to talk about it. She's like, nah, heard it all before, not interested, moving on, bye. You know, and it's great. And what keeps the song on edge, I think, is the tension that the person she's dismissing, the things that she's trying to expunge, that she is unable to do it. You know, I think that that's an interesting dynamic that I think that this works with. But I am not vaulting this just because comparing it immediately to Hung Up, I feel the same as you, Andy. It isn't quite as striking to me, despite being roughly as good. You know, like with Hung Up, it was like, whoa, this is what Madonna's doing now. This is great. You know, like that sort of thing. And whereas with Sorry, it's more like, ah, yeah, this is what Madonna's doing now. It's more high appreciation than excitement, if you know what I mean. And I think that also the sections in the other languages, I feel like they're a little bit of a missed opportunity to hide like a secret message in the song.
You
feel like it'd be like some kind of secret message, but like, you know, like, or, you know, like something that Madonna fans could, you know, do a bit of myth making, you know, like Turn Me On Dead Man and stuff like that. But it's just Sorry in different languages, and I wanted it to be a little bit more illuminating than that. I do think this is great overall. It's just not quite vault material for me. I think, well, I said this last time, but I do think that it's a shame that Get Together didn't get to number one, because that is one of the few kind of like major key, you know, like sort of like more optimistic, love filled songs from the album. And it's also the kind of like Madonna at her best in terms of the bit crushed, sort of like harsh electronics and electro clash and stuff of that era. I feel like that's her best go at stuff that wouldn't really become popular for another sort of 3 or 4 years, actually, at least in terms of the charts. But yeah, this is great. Just not quite Hung Up and just not quite vault material. But Lizzie, are you going to argue differently?
I mean, yes. Because I personally like this one better than Hung Up.
Oh, cool. Whoa. Okay, yes, wow. Go ahead.
Not for any particular, like, groundbreaking reason. I think that one is more well-remembered, but I find the drama in this one is a lot more relatable, with Madonna sort of chastising someone for their empty apologies rather than succumbing to insatiable lust, like on Hung Up. Also, Hung Up, for me, maybe leans a bit too hard on the ABBA sample, but on Sorry, I think Madonna and Stuart Price put together a solid disco groove with some genuine tension involved. This does also have a disco reference of its own, with the bass line bearing a bit of a resemblance to Can You Feel It by the Jacksons.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Not sure if they got a credit for that, but probably should have done. I mean, I'm also a fan of the syncopated vocals in the verses, like "Don't explain yourself, 'cause talk is cheap." I think it's a really interesting way of delivering that. I've showed you the demo version where that does come into it, but the verses are kind of more conventional as well. I think this, combined with the repeated, like, synthesized backing vocals that swirl in and out at various points, like "I've heard it all before, I've heard it all before," and like you said, the multiple languages, it suggests that Madonna is responding to these like repetitive, meaningless apologies that even come in different languages, but it's all the same. She responds with like cold, almost robotic responses of her own. Like, "Don't explain yourself, 'cause talk is cheap," to emphasize the lack of emotion that they elicit from her at this point. So, Yeah, like, she's heard it all before, but to me, it's the freshest Madonna has sounded in years, and I'm a really big fan of it.
Ooh, yeah, very well argued. Very glad we gave you the floor there. Yeah.
Cheers.
Ooh.
Took you long enough.
I might have something. I might have something to think about over the next period of time. Let's see. That was a very, very convincing argument.
Yeah, and I do think maybe I need to give this a few more goes, because, I mean, to just kind of elaborate a bit more on what I meant before about, you know, treating this through a certain lens, that I think part of the problem for me is that my relationship with Madonna, who I absolutely do love, by the way, but part of what I love about her is that I'm able to kind of come at her from a sort of macro level, and, you know, you haven't heard a particular song by her for a couple of years, and then it hits you, and you're just like, oh, whoa, God, I wish I could just listen to this every day. Like, it's so good. Like, the other week, out of coincidence, Ray of Light came on out of nowhere, which I haven't listened to for about a year. And I was just like, God, Ray of Light is so good. And it's happened to me with Express Yourself and with Vogue and kind of with Hung Up, to be honest. And I just kind of look for that instant lightning bolt of like, whoa, she's had an idea and she's executed it to the absolute maximum, throwing the kitchen sink at it. I think she does that in a way that's, you know, just so effective. And I don't get that from this one. But I really do acknowledge that that's perhaps not the best, most fair way to treat a song, really, that I perhaps need to give it a little bit more time. So who knows what I might think about it by the end of the year. But for now, for me, it's just sort of okay. But I don't know. I'm going to come back to you on this one, Lizzie. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the thing is, I always say that an opinion about a piece of art is never held in stone. It's an ongoing conversation, isn't it, with the work itself. And for whatever reason, in 3 or 5 years' time, or even 3 or 5 weeks' time, or days, you could feel completely different and look back and go, oh, like I kind of did with Loneliness by Tonecraft, where I initially was hesitant to put it in the vault, and then, like, a week later, I was like, that was stupid. I should have just committed at the time. But yeah,
yeah,
never
you
mind.
Should. What are you thinking? It's Loneliness by Tonecraft.
I corrected it at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And we'll have chances to go back and correct things that we feel need need that kind of treatment. But we will press on to the second song this week, and it's this. Hey! So good, I can't remember back. My inner clock is ticking, and the backbeat drives me mad. It's erotic, exotic, hypnotic, that's for sure. I put a smile on your face and take you to a place you've never been before. Let it all hang out. I'm gonna scream and shout. Don't you wanna get out of line? Everybody say, what time is it? It's Chico time. It's Chico time. It's Chico time by Chico. Released as the lead single from his still unreleased debut studio album titled Lights, Camera, Action, It's Chico Time is Chico's first single to be released in the UK and his first to reach number one. However, it is his last, and this is the last time that we'll be discussing Mr. Chico Slimani on this podcast. It's Chico Time went straight in at number one as a brand new entry, knocking Madonna off the top of the charts. It stayed at number one for 2 weeks. In its first week atop the charts, it sold 51,000 copies, beating competition from Beep by Pussycat Dolls and Will I Am, which got to number 2, No Tomorrow by Orson, which got to number 5, Sown by The Feeling, which got to number 7, and Don't Bother by Shakira, which got to number 9. In week 2, it sold 29,000 copies, beating competition from Red Dress by Sugar Babes, which got to number 4, and Touch the Sky by Kanye West and Lupe Fiasco, which got to number 6. When it was knocked off the top of the charts, It's Chico Time dropped one place to number 2. By the time it was done on the charts, it had been inside the top 100 for 12 weeks. The song has never received any official certification from the British phonographic industry, a true I Didn't Do It moment in 2006 UK music. Lizzie, Chico, how do you feel?
Well, I put it to you this week. Is 2006 the peak of reality TV star acceptance?
We've just had Chantel Horton walking into the Big Brother house as the only non-celebrity and winning celebrity Big Brother.
Yeah.
We have this when he didn't even finish in the top four of the X Factor. He didn't even make it to the final. So, it could be that for a very short period in 2006, that was like the peak. Yeah. Could
I think
be.
The way you framed that question is that's what I'm thinking about now, because it's not the peak of reality TV itself. That's probably a few years ahead. But in terms of it being, you know, something that generally was not frowned upon, that there was really proper mass appeal, and figures like Chico were not receiving anywhere near the same kind of condemnation as the likes of Jedward or Wagner. I think maybe, yes. Maybe sometime around this time, yeah. Because Chantel and Preston, yeah, they would have got so much more hate a few years after this. And no, I think you might be right about that, yeah.
You mentioned Preston, and like just the mere appearance of him on Celebrity Big Brother was enough to catapult the Ordinary Boys to the top 10 or even the top 5. And like Dead or Alive, they popped up again because Pete Burns was in the house. It's just, I'm thinking at this time, it is enough to just appear on a reality TV show in order to garner enough support to get a hit, which I don't think ever really happens again, other than the odd X Factor appearance. And it all kind of changes, in my opinion, after Celebrity Big Brother 2007 for fairly obvious reasons.
But agreed.
Yeah, I think this could be the height of reality TV creating viable career paths for those involved. It's just a shame that this song isn't very good. So, not really surprising that this is Chico's last hit. Like, the problem with novelty is that it wears off quickly, and this is no exception. This song is halfway between like a disco-light remake of Long Train Running by the Doobie Brothers and the theme tune for a forgotten CBBC sitcom. Maybe like Chico sharing a flat with Basil Brush, and this is the theme music. Like, I'm still none the wiser about what Chico time is, but after hearing this a few times, I think I'm better off not knowing.
All right then. Andy, what about you?
Yeah, I think there's a few things about this to unpack. First of all, this is not the first time the public would have heard It's Chico Time. It was performed on The X Factor.
It was
one of the very few times, certainly the first time and one of the very few times ever, as far as I know, that an original song was performed on The X Factor, written by Chico himself on the fly as well, which I think you can really tell, to be honest, because one of my major problems with this is that I have no idea what it is, what it's about, what it means, because you have these two kind of central hooks of the song, which is that what time is it? It's Chico time. And what is it? You can get delirious when you take life too serious. And it's like, first of all, what does that sentence even mean? And what's that got to do with it being Chico time? Like, is Chico time the time where you don't take life too seriously? Like, if so, what does that mean? Is Chico time like party time? How is it different to party time? I'm thinking too much about this, obviously. But that's kind of I think generally I don't really know what Chico time is or what these lyrics are about. And it really reeks of like, touch my bum, this is life kind of energy, to be honest. That's kind of what's making me think about. I'm just looking up actually, and Lucy Spraggan was the only other contestant to do an original song on X Factor. Like some years later, and she's kind of made a career off of that. So it kind of is viable, actually. Maybe they should have done a bit more of that on X Factor, of doing an original song. But anyway, I digress. I think Chico is one of the many reality TV contestants, some of which we've discussed before, such as Gareth Gates, who they know they've got something here, but they don't know quite what to do with him. The same way they did with Gareth Gates was like, people love this kid. Let's make a big career out of him. And with Chico, I think they knew that, you know, he's very entertaining. He's genuinely very likable. He's quite easy on the eye. He can sort of carry a tune. And people know who he is already. So, like, come on, he's a license to print money, surely. And they just don't quite know what to give him. I think it's very odd that given he's got that kind of braggadocio about him, and like I say, he's quite a sort of hunk, really, that this music video was full of kids and the song is aimed squarely at kids. That seems really strange to me, that they went down that route with him. I don't know whether maybe that was his idea. Maybe Chico's a bit of a family man. I don't know. But that, to me, just reeks of really bad marketing, that they just didn't know what to do with him at all. But then that's kind of a little bit endearing, in a way, that, like, he's just a guy having a bit of fun who wants to entertain the kids. Like, he's sort of Mr. Butlins, really. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with it, except it is a little bit shameful that it made it to number one, to be honest, because as a song, it's pretty crap, to be honest. Like, I always think that note that he holds on the "You take life too serious," it just seems to go on forever. And it's kind of a little, not quite out of tune, but it just doesn't really work with the chord sequence. Like I say, you can really tell that someone who's new to the industry has sat and written this at home and they've just gone with it. It just doesn't sound very nice melodically or harmonically, to be honest. So as a song, I think it's really, really bad. But I just kind of like Chico. I think he's just a nice guy. You don't really get people like him anymore who go on reality TV, not particularly for fame and fortune, but kind of to have a good time. And if fame and fortune comes with it, then that's great. And it's one of the things I really liked about Wagner, who, you know, on X Factor a couple of years later, that he wasn't trying to get famous. He just got famous as being on it and went with it and was very gracious about it and enjoyed his 15 minutes. And that is the kind of joke contestant, the kind of comedy contestant that I really like on reality shows, that ironically are the ones that don't take themselves too serious, as Chico would say. So I'm not going to completely condemn this. I mean, as a piece of music, if this was someone I'd never heard of and it was just a random number one, this would be absolutely the pits for me. It would be getting a 1 or 2 out of 10 from me. But I think Chico carries it with enough, just about enough, likability and charisma that it's okay. Just okay. But like I say, I think they could have carved out a better career for him if they'd taken a little bit of time to think about it. This is like 3 weeks after X Factor is finished that this got released. Like, calm down. Think of something for Chico to do and then release a single. Or don't release a single. Because they didn't release the album, which I don't think I've ever heard of that before, where an album is completely finished. The track list has been released to the public. And the album they just don't bother with it. That's absolutely... Yeah. Crazy. I can't think of another example like that for a big pop star who just straight up hasn't released the album when it's right at the point of release. So yeah, they really had no idea what to do with Chico, but I like him anyway. So yeah, not too bad.
As for me, because I was 11 years old, I obviously loved Chico on the X Factor and I wanted him to win, because to an 11 year old, he's very fun and very exciting. Like, what if a children's TV presenter just got dropped into a singing competition and decided to become a singer? Like, you know, I mean, looking back, like, I was watching all of his performances again this week, and the thing with his audition where Simon gets up and walks out, like, obviously the whole thing is for show and it's part of creating the character of Chico, but the whole thing ends up working because I think Chico is exactly why The X Factor ended up lasting longer than Pop Idol did. And why, until they started messing with it too much, The X Factor was more fun for a while. Because Pop Idol was all about the singing, but The X Factor, with its suitably vague name, it meant that it had more room for outsiders and wildcards who were never going to win, but the likes of Chico and Wagner, but also Jedward, you know, the kind of contestants, they're the ones that people really remember, like, outside of the winners. And the ones who've actually had pop careers, you know, like the sort of the well put together ones who maybe made it a bit further. You know, I would imagine that more people remember Chico and Jedward than remember, like, you know, Journey South or,
you leave Journey South out of this.
The Conway sisters, that sort.
The ones who were very well put together and very professional, but yeah, exactly. But the thing with Chico is that, like, he couldn't sing, but he could perform. And I do think that there was a big cult of personality around Chico at the time. Because he had his own, like, "It's Chico time" was a catchphrase that he made for himself on the show. and eventually gets it turned into a number one single. Like, there were people turning up to live X Factor recordings with signs that said, "What time is it?" on the sign, and they would wave it about, and he would look at them and go, "Ah, it's Chico time," etc., etc. Because it was a big deal, I think, as well, that Chico was going to have a go at the charts, because he finished about 6th or 5th, but he was clearly more popular than that finishing position suggested. And so the bones of this are all right, I think. The absolute bare bones of it are fine. You know, it's a corny disco track about having a good time, being emotionally freed by music. You know, Chico is a limited vocalist, but he does have personality in his voice, and he carries himself fairly well through the majority of this, I think, until at least like the last act, where there's not much to say other than go Chico, go, over and over until they have to go back to the chorus. But like, it is shit, but like, it's not as shit as I remember it being. But still, you know, the brass sounds terrible. There's this inescapable feeling that, like, if you heard this outside of a kid's school disco or a Butlins entertainment hall, then you would briefly think that you were at a school disco or a Butlins entertainment, the hall on the Butlins camp.
Yeah.
I mean, he did end up doing a Butlins tour, Chico, not long after this.
I think on that point, it has to be said that, I don't know about you two, but I have... Since 2006, I have literally never heard this again. Like, this was my first time hearing this in a good 15, 16 years, like, when we put this on. Like, I really have not heard this at all since the time. Yeah.
Well, I haven't... you're right that it's Chico time. can't believe this happened. Like, with it's Chico time, I haven't heard that for a long time. But in 2010, Chico briefly returned... to do It's England Time ahead of the 2010 World Cup, where he just debased himself on GMTV and performed this It's England Time song, like, all over TV on breakfast TV shows, and like, oh, it's Chico, he's back, oh, look at him, do you remember him? Well, he's doing an England song now, and I think it's somehow worse than all of those ones from the mid to late 2000s, where whenever England were in a major tournament, hits from around the time, artists went back into the studio to just kind of, like, pretend that, like, oh, we care about this, like, this song of ours that's a really big hit can be easily transposed into a football song, a la Football's Coming Home Again from Atomic Kitten. Because they had, is it Infernal who did From Paris to Berlin? They did From London to Berlin. He had Tony Christie going back in to do Is This the Way to Win the World Cup?
DJ Otzi do one?
DJ Otzi did an England one as well. I mean, thank God England didn't qualify for Euro 2008, and it spared us this nonsense for like 4 years between the two World Cups. Because, Jesus, and then it's England time. He just debases himself and makes an idiot of himself, basically. And it doesn't even chart. The song doesn't even chart. It's a World Cup single and people didn't even buy it. Like, World Cup singles get into the top 20 automatically just because, oh, it's England, yeah, we'll listen to this.
Because he's Welsh.
Yes, it's also part of it as well.
It's not your place.
Yeah. But I think with this, and with the England version, but definitely with this, there's this kind of, like, shitty Comic Relief style production all over this, where, like, if this was the Comic Relief single for the year, you'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, there is something so tacky about, you know, The Spirit in the Sky by Gareth Gates and Uptown Girl, the Westlife, the version of Uptown Girl that they did. Just, like, just these crappy, farty horns all over it. And it all sounds so plasticky and false. Like, if you touched it, you wouldn't be able to wash it off your hands for weeks, no matter how much you tried. You know, like, when you accidentally stick your hand in butter or Vaseline, and you try and wash it off at the tap, and then, like, you can't get it off. It's just little water droplets over, like, a little layer of jelly on the end of your finger. That's what it would be like, I think, if you accidentally stuck your hand in this. It really wants to be, like, Play That Funky Music, White Boy, or Oops Upside Your Head, but it ends up more like sub-Living La Vida Loca. Like, I do think there was a lot of, like, post-Ricky Martin syndrome about Chico like the way that he was posited on the X Factor. I wouldn't be surprised if they made him do Live in La Vida Loca twice.
Sure, I remember him doing it.
Yeah,
wasn't there a time where he took his clothes off and danced in a fountain during judges' houses or something? And I'm sure he was doing Live in La Vida Loca then.
He jumped in the pool with a live mic. Well done.
Yeah,
electrocute yourself before the live shows. The plan.
Yeah, God. Yeah, I do find this actually frustrating more than anything, because I do think there's a fun song in here, but it's just swallowed by all the crappy, tacky mastering and production and the kind of writing that just spoils the experience. Like you were saying, Andy, all these if you can get delirious if you take life too serious. Not sure what's going on with that, to be honest. But yeah, not terrible. Not going to pie hole it. Just saying that now. But I think it's just one of those where, like you were saying, they put all the kids in the music video and they put all the kids on this stage performance of it on the X Factor about 3 months before it was released. And I think, when you're 11, this is the best thing in the world. And then when you're 13, it's
I was going to say this, that there's obviously been plenty of novelty songs that we've covered over the past 6 years that we've done. But I think out of everything we've ever had on the show, this is the one that I would be most embarrassed to be caught listening to. And it's not the worst thing ever, because stuff like Crazy Frog or Cha-Cha Slide or whatever, you can sort of be it's a bit of nostalgia there. But if someone saw you listening to Chico Time, you'd be like, oh God, it's a mistake. Sorry. I only listened to this at home because... nobody listens to Chico.
It's not what it looks like.
The streams for this per year must be in the tens. Nobody listens to this anymore, do they? The only other thing I want to say on this as well, and I'm sure Rob, you'll illuminate me on this one, that the whole "What Time Is It" thing, High School Musical, right? Is that song in the first or second High School Musical?
I think it might be in the second one.
Because it's uncanny how much that "What Time Is It" refrain is a lot like the High School Musical one. And
it is in two.
Yeah, so did they steal it's that from vacation. This in some way?
Yes.
Did they borrow totally that from this? Because it really is very, very reminiscent of "What Time Is It" from High School Musical.
Is that not just an old hip-hop thing?
Yeah, "What Time Is It?" Summertime, it's our vacation.
What time is it? Summertime. I mean, Chico time.
What time is it? Time of our lives. Oh, great movie, the second High School Musical. The first one's okay with a pretty killer soundtrack for teenagers, but I genuinely think the second film is the one where they really lean into how silly it all is. Where they get Ryan, Sharpay's brother, to be in two places at once but never acknowledge it during the fabulous music routine, where he's playing piano in the pool but also on the deck chairs at the same time in different outfits. And they never address the fact that he's in two places at once. They just totally lean into this, just the ridiculousness of the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's other things that Ryan obviously is that they don't address as well, but,
Yeah, definitely. But, Troy doing, running and spinning routines on a golf course during Bet On It and staring at himself in the water. I don't even think these are things that have been memed later and have become ridiculous. Because there's even, his involvement in Gotta Go My Own Way, which is you don't even know that Troy's going to be in it until the end of the second chorus. And he just appears. What about us? but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there's if they're not copying each other or whatever. It's just that it's come from the same point of inspiration, for sure. But we will move on to our final song this week and leave Chico behind. See you later, Chico.
Bye, Chico.
Say hi to David Icke for me.
Yeah, of course, because he's been appearing in anti-vax, anti-lockdown protests.
Oh, that's a shame, over the past
isn't
few
it? Years and stuff like that. Yeah.
Of all the people on this podcast, he was the least likely, I think. But yeah, there he was.
So we will move on to our third and final number one this week, and it is this.
There's no line for you and me, cause tonight we're VIP. I know somebody at the door. I see that twinkle in your eye, you shake that ass and I just die. Let's check our coats and move out to the floor.
This is No Tomorrow by Orson. Released as the lead single from the band's debut studio album titled Bright Idea, No Tomorrow is Orson's first single to be released in the UK and their first to reach number one. However, it is their last, and this is the last time that we'll be discussing Orson on this podcast. No Tomorrow first entered the UK chart at number 5, reaching number 1 in its third week, knocking Chico off the top spot. It stayed at number one for 1 week. In its first and only week at the summit, it sold 17,694 copies, which makes it the lowest selling number one single in the entire history of the UK chart. It went to number one during a week when there were no new entries in the top 10. When it was knocked off the top of the chart, No Tomorrow fell 2 places to number 3. By the time it was done on the charts, it had been inside the top 100 for 18 weeks. The song is currently officially certified gold in the UK as of 2023. What a curious, curious chart record for No Tomorrow by Orson. Andy, how do you feel about it?
I feel great about it, Rob. I mean, I've been dying to get to this one because it's one of those songs that I think... Maybe this is to do with the low chart sales. Maybe it was to do with the fact that it never really blew up in the sense that a lot of number ones do. In that, there's this weird effect about this that I found quite a few people seem to have thought they were the only people who liked this at the time. Because I remember feeling like that. I'm like, God, this song is so good. Like, who is it? Like, I don't know anyone else who's like been singing this song. I just heard it on the radio quite a bit. And I loved it. And then my husband was the same. He was like, have you ever heard this song called No Tomorrow by Orson? Which, like, I was like, yes! Yes, we love this. And then I know that, like, Rob, I know you're a big fan of it as well. And there's a few other friends as well who have been like, oh, yeah, I used to love that song. And I think maybe because it didn't get that big, it sort of had this slightly underground feel, which it wasn't underground at all, not by any sense. But the fact that Orson never really took off and this song was a very, very much kind of a sleeper hit, I think has created this kind of cool effect around it that people look back on it as like something that doesn't get talked about very much, but at the time I absolutely loved this and I still love it. I think it's absolutely brilliant because it's so short and packs so much into those few minutes that it kind of plays with verse and chorus and bridge and intro and outro structure in this way that's really like you really don't know where the song's going a lot of the time, but in a good way. It doesn't just completely get chaotic. But it's just made of so many brilliant little bits with the hoo, 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 and then really catchy choruses, really catchy verses. It has that one bit in this song, obviously in the long tradition of stuff like compliment. For me, the one bit in this song is a girl who thinks I rock.
I mentioned that too, yeah.
Yeah, and then I think that last chorus really elevates it as well, that it's a slightly different, well, it's the same chord structure of the chorus, but it's not the chorus, the when we're together, when we're together. And I love that it ends on a build-up that like it kind of drops you into the end of the song with the you and me, oh you and me, like it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and then the end, and it just leaves you wanting more. That it's almost like you've watched a trailer for a bigger song, like you've kind of been given a tease of something else that will never come. It's just a couple of minutes of real excitement that doesn't really sound like anything else around at the moment, because it's got this lovely mix of synths in there, so it's not just standard landfill indie. It's really kind of poppy and accessible, but not to the extent of something like McFly. I think this is just something quite unique and really, really easy to fall in love with. And yeah, I just absolutely adore this, and I'm so glad that we've got to cover it. And it's so undeserved for this to be the lowest selling number one ever, because this is probably going to be in my top 5 of the year, this one. Yeah, I think it's fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, I also feel like the title that it has is a bit harsh as well. Lizzie, what about you? How do you feel?
Yeah, I've also made a note of that. Like, poor Orson, rather than simply being remembered for having a fluke hit, they have to lug around that dubious honour as like a permanent asterisk. Especially given that I do like this. I don't think I like it as much as you, Andy, but I think it's pretty decent overall. It's a bit like You Get What You Give by the New Radicals, in that it's full of addictive, like, power pop hooks. But it's been passed through a sort of indie sleaze filter, which was the style at the time. I listened to the Bright Idea album this week. To me, it kind of sounds like The Strokes if they'd replaced Julian Casablancas with Adam Levine doing an impression of Jack White. I think the album's kind of so-so, but this is the best track on it because it's short, it's punchy, and it's full of hooks that a lot of other pop rock bands would kill for. But yeah, I don't love it. The vocals do grate on me a bit. I know you pointed out that a girl who thinks I don't like that. I don't know. It's a bit too knowing. And for this being your first hit, I don't think you're at that point where you can really do that. You've got to earn that. It's a minor complaint, though. I think generally it's pretty good. Yeah.
With No Tomorrow. This is one of the few songs we've covered, because we're entering that period of my life now, where I remember exactly where I was and exactly how I felt when I first heard it. I was in the car with my dad and a friend of mine from school, this guy called Alex. It was February half term, I think, in 2006, and we went for a day out to the football museum when it used to be in Preston at Deepdale before they moved it to the centre of Manchester. And I remember hearing the intro to this and thinking that Kylie had come back with a new song. It like, you know, because you hear it, you know, that kind of trebly bass line, the at the start.
Yeah.
And then I thought, oh, Kylie must be back. But then Jason Pebworth started singing. So I was like, oh, okay, no, it's not Kylie. And that was my first experience with this. I just also want to mention that this being the lowest selling number one of all time is very harsh, because it entered the chart at number 5 during a week when Chico sold 50,000 copies or so. And this actually ends up being the 12th biggest selling song of 2006. So I think it probably shifted about, I don't know, 30,000 copies, maybe 25,000 copies in its first week at the top, which isn't amazing, but like, you can see why this has already been on the chart for like 3 weeks at this point. It's clearly not going to be selling at its highest point, I don't think.
No.
And this has gone gold in the UK, so I don't know. It's weird how Chico feels like a bigger craze that people remember, but this has ended up selling more. Numbers are funny.
When we were talking about Chico, I did mean to ask about this. When you said it's never received any certification, I can't remember. Is that the first time that that's happened? That we've had a song that hasn't made any certification at all?
No. We've had a few.
We've had a few. Right, okay.
Yeah. Although I guess also with Chico and Orson is that at least Orson got an album, you know, like serving the tea. But I mean, the thing with Chico's album was really strange. Like, they did his first single and then they did a follow-up single, which was D-I-S-C-O, but it was like, it was changed to C-H-I-C-O.
Oh, fucking hell. Of course it was, wasn't it?
In places. And it only got to like number 23 and they were like, right, yeah, we've recorded the album and it's finished, but we can't be asked paying for manufacturing costs because, you know, you're not doing well enough. And then he did another song which was called Curvy Cola Bottle Body. Curvy Cola Bottle Body Baby or something like that. And that just bombed and then that was the end of it.
He is C, conspiracist. He is H, hysterical. He is I, introverted. He is C, COVID conspiracies. He is
But with No Tomorrow, I loved this at the time and I still just about love it now, thankfully. I love all like the fidgety syncopated guitar work in the verses. It's got a real driving chorus as well that properly soars and is memorable and open-hearted. Like you, Andy, and Lizzie, you both pointed out, it's got lots of little licks and riffs in this, and that it never becomes the main riff or the lead part. It's just lots of lovely little decorations that kind of pepper the instrumental, because you get the and then in the verse you get
the little synth bubbles, the bitty 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 thing over the top as well. That really adds to the texture of it. It really does.
And this Jason Pedworth guy, I think he has like a pretty decent voice. I know what you mean about the Jack White impression though, Lizzie.
He does have a decent voice, but he leans too hard into those rockisms. You know what I mean?
Yes.
When I'm in too easy tomorrow, that's what he's doing, that kind of big mouth thing, which is like, once you notice it, you can't unnotice it, and it's not his natural voice.
That was the style at the time, though. I don't think you can quite lay that at his door.
Like, you've got to push against that to stand out in a way that, like, I don't know, Alex Turner did.
I remember this is one of the things I really didn't like about Reverend and the Makers. If you remember them, the heavyweight champion of the world, that the guy's over rocky voice, like, it was clearly affected voice. I used to really not like that. Yeah.
Oh, I've got a bit of a history with him of Reverend and the Makers from years in the future, which we'll discuss, I'm sure, when we get around that time. But this, I feel like this is the kind of thing that Weezer were trying and sort of failing to do shortly after this time with albums like Ratitude and all of Rivers Cuomo's work for acts like All Time Low and Bob and Adam Lambert. You know, because he wrote Magic for Bob, the B.O.B. thing, and he wrote I Feel Like Dancing for All Time Low as well. Just that kind of like, you know, really polished pop rock. Very sort of like late 2000s style, that kind of aesthetic. But this gets, you know, this has all the super synthetic, polished power pop stuff, but like it has some seriously solid and interesting writing behind it, I think, because you get that amazing final chorus, which does the thing that I always love from final choruses, where it's actually just a totally new section masquerading as a chorus. You know, that Teenage Dirtbag does the same thing. With the oh yeah, dirtbag, oh she does it, and you think this sounds exactly like the first two choruses, and then you're like, oh, but it isn't, is it? And Into You by Ariana Grande kind of does a similar thing. I think with time and age, the kind of party boy posturing in the verses maybe doesn't suit the rest of the song or the rest of the band's material, which was always a little more innocent and suited them better, you know, lyrically. I do like the bit, though, where he does the I got a girl who thinks I rock, not necessarily because of his pronunciation, but because he just leaves that little gap. He just delays the word rock, because he could easily go, I got a girl who thinks I rock, but he goes, I got a girl who thinks I space rock, and that's nice little bits of writing that kind of remind me a little bit of things that Hayley Williams might do a few years later with some Paramore records. And there are other songs as well, like Brat Idea, Happiness, Already Over. There's something a bit kind of post-Britpop about those songs too, which this doesn't really have, but they just weren't quite as strong or memorable as this. I also think that Jason Pedworth, a bit like Rivers Cuomo, funnily enough, but also Ryan Tedder from around this time, is that they were writing so many songs for other artists that their own work sometimes didn't quite have as tight an identity as it possibly should or could, because Bright Idea was the follow-up, and it doesn't have that same... It's a nice song, it's fine, but it just... Nothing else on their album sounds like this. I feel like this is one that they were maybe pushing towards another band, and then they decided to keep it themselves because they knew it was a big potential to be quite a big hit. But it's not really a major complaint. And, you know, while we're on this, it definitely needs mentioning that this is not the last time that we'll be coming to Jason Pedworth on this podcast. Because he had already written for Girls Aloud by this point, which is his song was The Show. He went on to write for Gabriella Chilmi, Sugar Babes, Olly Murs, Pixie Lott, Jessie J, David Guetta, Connor Maynard, DJ Fresh, Iggy Azalea, Zayn Malik, Charlie XCX. Like, it clearly has a knack for this kind of stuff, and I think it just takes other artists to sell his material and really get him, like, the big bucks, if you know what I mean. But yeah, I'm glad that we've been able to come back to No Tomorrow. I do think it's kind of great. I do think it's kind of great, and I will be vaulting this. Sorry. I don't know. I'll come back to it later. I'll listen to it a bit more. Maybe I'll redecide at the end of the year. Chico time is not going anywhere for me. Andy, are any going in the pie hole or the vault for you?
No Tomorrow is sailing into the vault, definitely. I think this is the kind of song that the vault was made for, to be honest, of stuff that perhaps didn't get quite the fanfare that it deserved at the time, even though people really liked it, and now deserves to be celebrated by us as obviously the court-appointed arbiters of taste, which I realise is how I made that sound then. But anyway, no, definitely, definitely vaulting No Tomorrow. Sorry's going nowhere, that's sort of above average, but fine. As for Chico Time, I'm not pie-holing it, but I really have to say, I think that's the closest a song has ever got to being pie-holed without falling in there. It's the only reason I haven't is because of that sort of childlike, innocent likability.
Lizzie, are any songs going into the pie-hole or the vault for you?
Well, sorry, Rob and Andy, but I'm putting it in the vault.
Hey.
It may well be Chico time, but it's not time for the vault or the pie hole. And No Tomorrow, and also no pie hole or vault for Orson.
Oh.
I'm not going to put Chico in the pie hole just purely because I know there's worse coming, which definitely deserves to be in there.
If you had pie holed No Tomorrow, then there would have been no tomorrow for our friendship, Lizzie. So I'm glad that was right.
Hey.
Well, that is it for this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. When we come back, we'll be continuing our journey through 2006, and we'll see you then. See you soon. Bye-bye now.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
I took shelter from a shower, and I stepped into your arms on a rainy night in Soho. The wind was whistling all its charm. I sang you all my sorrows. You told me all your joys. Whatever happened to that old song? To all those little girls and boys.